Yeah, I updated all of my Warhammer Fantasy Empire miniatures with round bases, you know, for that game to play it with, Saga Age of Magic.
Fortified Niche.
Hey there, everyone. This is Fortified Niche, your miniature podcast about indie games and whatnot. Here we are today with me, your host, JC Dent, accompanied always and forever by the other host, Casa.
Hello!
If you like us this much, you should also follow us on Patreon, and where you'll get access to our some bonus special episodes where we talk about talk more about the games we played and maybe even go deeper into army building at this point. It's hard to remember.
It depends.
So, Casa, how have you been doing recently and nerd gamily?
Good. I got a parcel from some address in Lithuania that I didn't recognize, and it had food inside of it, which was very exciting. So that's going to be open at some point when I look at how to eat it. It looks like waffles. I'm not sure what it is. but I'm excited. Wasn't just wrapped in paper like last time, so that's very cool. Gaming-wise, not much, but I'm doing board games tomorrow with mates, which is very exciting. We're playing Bantam West Great Western Trail, New Zealand, where you can have a dog and raise and grow sheep and, like, I want to say evolve them, like the Pokemon, not evolve them, but, like, breed them and encourage them to sort of be better for wool or food or something, is my understanding. I'm extremely excited. Great Western Trail is very cool. It's like a tableau builder, and like you're moving through the map, so you have a bunch of ways to play it. It's sick, and I'm cool to see this variation of it. And also, miniature skirmish games are neat, so.
Yeah. Monster breeding games, but it's just about sheep.
Yeah, and Bantam West has miniatures, so that totally counts.
Yeah, same.
Might actually take over Techno Bowl stuff and sort of be like, hey guys, we could try this. Because I think one mate would be like, oh my god, and the mate would be like, yeah, all right. So
it's doable.
I just cut it out and get some standy stand thingos for the salt for our figures, but that's not really a barrier. That's just, is Casa gonna be lazy? Probably, but also he can make it happen.
We all hope that you will make it happen.
We'll see. All right. What about you? What's happening in the JC Dent world?
This Saturday I was essentially press ganged to run a bit of a Eldritch Horror game, and this is like I didn't expect that we're going to try and play that, so I hadn't even had a refresher on the rules. I haven't played it decently for like 10 years at this point. It's just like sometimes you take it out, spend a lot of time setting it up, and then the board beats you in the head. But so I went into this nervous fugue state or nervous zone where I was like, okay, cutting out any social interaction that isn't related to me remembering the rules and setting up the game. My girlfriend even gave me sheets of A4 paper. It's like to write out the important information, and I stuck it on the TV, and so now it's going to be a permanent setup. And everyone liked it, so I guess I did a good job
was that,
at it.
Is that the card game or is that like the dice game?
Eldritch Horror is the globe.
Yeah, the global one. A mate's actually streaming a game of it right now. It's quite funny.
Yeah. So, it's the globe-trotting Cthulhu punching game. Versus like, the board.
Every time a board game comes up for anyone, the first thing I've started doing is like, right, either you're going to read the rule book or the first half hour of board game day is going to be us all watching a video. If you don't want to watch this video, you can watch it ahead of time or on the day. I don't care. If you don't want to watch the video, you're not going to play the fucking game because I don't want to deal with people being like that. Like, obviously, not everyone learns this way, but it's how I learn best. And like, here's a rubric ahead of time if you learn better that way. I'll make mistakes and stuff. Like, it's very encouraging and supportive, but also like, I'm just sick of like, but what do I do? I didn't understand your 45 minutes of blah, 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 blah. Like, oh, we watched the video, man. Like, get back to it. Check it out. Yeah, or like, order Esoteric Gamers and try to find like a good bunch of cheat sheets is always really important for me.
Yeah, maybe I should look into like finding and printing out cheat sheets for some of the games that we have. It won't like, make the game setting up that much easier, but...
Could. I might have a boxing set for you.
It's one of those features that my girlfriend reiterated that she appreciates me, that when it comes to board games, I'm entirely willing to just sit down and hammer my way through the rules. Like, it's not the first time I'm getting to play a game with my cousins, like, and just bulldozing through the rules and people's unwillingness to learn. Like, one time they brought Mask of the Red Death or something, and I was like, okay, I don't know much about this game or anything at all at that point. I don't remember if I even watched the video back then, but like I'm going through the rules. We're gonna play the sucker, and we did. So like,
yeah, and like being the rules guy can be like exhausting because you have to know the rules, and some people I play with, that also means you're essentially playing their turn. You're telling them like, how do I do this? How do I do that? And that's fine. Like, I don't mind if your first turn or first couple turns is like, what's the best thing for me to do? How do I accomplish this goal? Like, sure, like that helps both ways. Like, I'll try to do this. We keep each other honest and stuff. That's fine. But when it's like four or five, a couple of games into something, you're still sort of like, how do I move my guy again? It's like, have you just paid attention? Maybe board games aren't for you. And that's fine. You can find friends that love board games instead. Also, Esoteric World of Gamers does have phone call plans for Eldritch Horror Box inserts, and that's very funny.
But moving away from Eldritch Horror and onto this podcast that's not about board games, I guess. Today, it's a fairly or very special episode as we tackle Saga Age of Magic. Because, like, we don't usually tackle supplements for games, because Saga Age of Magic is one of the quote-unquote universes for second edition Saga game. But man, I read Saga Age of Magic once, and I was like, hey, yeah, this is a thing that's clearly made to capitalize on all those abandoned Warhammer Fantasy Battles armies floating around after Age of Sigmar gave it the axe. And unlike Age of Sigmar, this felt to me immediately like the non-rank and flank miniatures on round basis alternative or inheritor to that I would like to play Warhammer Fantasy Battles. And especially with the way some of the armies are formed and the units, especially special units they get.
I feel like it came out pretty far after Age of Sigmar, because it'd been 2019. But yeah, like as a sort of, hey, you like skirmish fantasy of like a largest size, like you can get what, like 12, maybe not, like 100 guys at most in your army if you try really hard and bring a really bad army if there's levies. For the most part, you sort of like 50 to 100 models is a doable faction, and like that's almost all you'll ever need. Like, if you go, you start to like vacillate between all Hearthguard, all warriors, and all levies, and I guess with Magic you have like creatures and monsters and war machines, but they're also much more limited, those new options. And mindless, I guess. So you could have 80 there, and then 48 levies, and then a sorcerer. Anyway, but yeah, like, it's just so good.
We'll get to that in army building, but like, there is no premise to the Age of Magic book. It doesn't have its own setting. It's meant to be agnostic, though it does provide each army type provides free inspirations that the ways you can take the army. So one is usually the most obvious one. So like for Kingdom of Men, the first one is, hey, these guys are your fantasy humans or your Warhammer fantasy empire. They're organized, they potentially have guns, they're the human kingdom. The second option being like, hey, these are just the high elves, they're magical and they're also regimented and they're no slouches in combat. And the third option, if I remember, was like, hey, this is an oppressive theocracy that's being run by their regime of holy orders. So that's all of, that's like the three approaches, but not limited to these three approaches, but three approaches you could take. The
just sort of like ideas and forth processing about like, what does this army look like? What should I take inspiration from? Oh, it can either be like high elves or like a militaristic order of karate monks, or like just sort of your bog standard fantasy humans doing human things of like complex fiefdoms and medieval air quotes.
Yeah. So and this all runs on the Saga engine, like if you get into the rules.
One of the best engines to base any of your skirmish games upon, I would say.
Basically, Studio Tomahawk, known here already for Dracula's America and Muskets and Tomahawks.
I don't think they were Dracula's America.
Well, I think they published Dracula's America at this point. Because on their website, they list, I think, six game Congo, Dracula's America, Frostgrave 2nd Edition, which isn't exactly their game. It's another outing by our...
Mr. McCullough.
Yes, Mr. McCullough, with whom we have a very complicated relationship, I guess. Complex. Jugula, the... Gladiator game, Muskets and Tomahawks, a game we liked dearly, and Saga. Saga is the first game I was exposed to from Tomahawk. I played Vikings in the first edition. I ran through at least a single full campaign, maybe, and I think I got partway into the second. I've won Saga maybe twice in my playthrough. In my experience, so if I still like the game despite always losing in it, then it's Infinity. I mean, Saga. Gosh, how do you describe Saga?
The only thing you describe in Saga. Okay, first up, everything is dice pools, so D6s, all D6s. There's nothing else but D6s in this game. Everyone fights, no matter what sort of. There's no measuring from model to model except for movement. There's four movement sticks. One of them is 12 inches. One is 6 inches. One is 4 inches. One is 2 inches. Long, medium. Very small and small, small and very small, in descending order. So it doesn't matter how many of your levy get in range, they all fight, which is fantastic and makes for a lot less book tracking. Winner of the fight doesn't run away, ties, the attacker runs away. Basically, you both roll your attack dice and then take roll your defense dice and that many casualties, and then there's a fatigue system. We have three fatigue or more, you start losing models. Some units have a way to take fatigue instead of losing units, which is very important. But the coolest thing is the battle boards, because the battle boards are fucking
amazing.
Battle
boards, baby!
Battle boards are everything CPs want to be. They're everything order tokens want to be. They're everything that every game should aspire to include in some small way or take mechanical inspiration from in a meaningful manner. You have your special Saga dice, which is generated based on how many units you have in your army that generate Saga dice, which could be between 0 to 8, depending on how badly things are going. You roll lows, they have three sides of like 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, and 3 is one result, 4 and 5 is another result, and 6 is the best result. And they can activate your units, your levies, your hearth guard, your warriors, your heroes, your creatures, your monsters, your war machines, or your mindless, depending on another special factional units. So not everyone can be activated by everything. It's harder to activate your levies because they don't want to be there. And generally, you also have like, either there's activating your units and everyone can activate as for free in a maneuver, as long as they stay outside of 12 of any model. What else? Yeah, and then you have like your abilities. Like, oh, I'm going to start returning all my guys from the dead because fuck you. Oh, I'm going to activate four squads of warriors at once because command and control doesn't exist for me. Haha. Fear by unkillable skeletal might. They're fantastic. They're so good. Every faction has their own specific one. So there's like six battle boards in this game.
It's one for every magical faction.
Yeah, every faction gets one.
Since magic allows for a bit more complicated, I don't know, unit interactions than in the regular game where you're still dealing humans fighting humans, so some factions might not even have levies per se. So, some factions shuffle around which units are activated by which category, because on a regular Saga board, it's the first category activated on any dice is your Hearthguard and your heroes, because those are the most motivated and the best trained people. The second easiest to activate, I don't remember if it's on any dice result or just the two most common, is your warriors, because they're professional guys. They still want to be there, but they're not that invested. And the last category is usually levies, who are, yes, they're there, but they would prefer not to be there, and they're not that well trained. And the magic allows them to shuffle things around. For example, an army that can hire more monsters or relies on monsters more will have their monsters placed in the warrior category and not the levy category. So the armies start differing from there, and it goes even wilder when you go into advanced Saga abilities, which could be anything from activating a unit to do a thing to having abilities that spice up the way you run the melees or shooting, to reaction abilities that Casa ignores.
Oh, the way the game works is you have your orders phase, you have your activations phase, and then like a cleanup phase. You can only spend Saga dice in the orders phase, so I'm always forgetting to pre-plan things because I'd rather move all my guys. And it's just like a mental hurdle I have because I don't play enough Saga to sort of remember exactly how things work. So you roll your dice, you assign your dice, and then you do what the dice say. So you kind of have to assume that, like, all right, you're probably going to charge my squad of the four horsemen, so I want to make sure they've got, like, better defense and more roll dice and are unkillable and stuff. And then I'm like, oh, but also I want them to move and murder your guys and also rest, remove fatigue, and also all these things that I want everyone to be doing all the time. You have to decide ahead of time, and I'm really bad at that, as people may realize they play games against me. It's either in person, because like TTS makes everything more finicky and more fiddly and more sort of like out of your like point of view, because that object permanence thing on TTS is really hard to keep in mind. But like, so we'll just have a quick look at, say, the Lords of the Wild. So they activate, everyone basically has the same top rank. There is a new one in Age of Magic, where you have a magic bonus dice. We can add more dice, magic dice, to your magic dice pool, or reroll up Saga dice, or you can do the activation pool.
That's the activation pool is regular one. It's it has been since the first edition. Those are called the basic abilities. I don't like the name abilities because they're just you're either activating troops or fudging with the dice. To me, my Saga abilities is what the game calls the advanced abilities, which are the, like, you know, the special sauce that in some instances say turn all the enemy attack dice into defense dice, so like the enemy can't hurt you, they can defend from you much better. But
it's great though, because like they all take different combinations. Some of them require like matching dice to do it, like Poisoned Blades requires two tree symbols, but like Ambush only needs a hammer, and like you'll get a hammer most of the time. It's the most common dice result, I believe. Or Sharpened Arrows, which requires a bird, so you discard one to three of your dice and then the enemies just get hit. They just automatically get hit by that. So if you've got like a lot of shots, then they can be really good. Or like if you've got different dice, there's also something about dice counting as things from memory, but I can't remember. I'm going to pause the podcast and double check. Actually, can you do that? Can you have dice count as other dice?
Can you, what do you mean?
Like, can a dice turn down?
I don't remember that. And I don't think any of the Saga boards have neutral results where, like, anything goes. Well, because magic has results that activate on any magic dice, but...
Oh my god. So, Living Roots just requires any kind of dice to go on there. So they are specific dice. Okay, cool. Yep, so back in the podcast. Something I've just realized and didn't last time we played is that when it throws three kinds or two kinds or one kind of dice, it's any of those dice will do. So an ambush requires a hammer, but a sacred dance requiring trees and a hammer will accept either dice. But say your poison blades requires a tree and a tree. I thought you needed all of them because I'm very, very silly.
Meanwhile, I either remember this from experience or just read the rule better, the rule book more carefully, which is weird, I guess, from how impatient I am. But Saga is just a very good rule set, and going deeper into it, it's like it has all sorts of things. Like, for example, you could activate a unit as long as you have a Saga ability dice, but it prevents Ramboing by inflicting fatigue on the subsequent activations, by only allowing rest to remove fatigue as the first activation. Like, fatigue is also used creatively. It's not just something that makes units harder to activate or makes them slower. Well, maybe sometimes it does.
Did I?
But, yeah, but fatigue is something that the enemy can use. Fatigue is a resource
your enemy
for the
can spend your fatigue. So the more fatigued you are, the more vulnerable you are to the enemy doing things. Whether that's them reducing your charge range, which is infuriating, or reducing your armor, or increasing their own armor. And with Age of Magic, some models and units have gained the ability to use, like, not just their immediate opponent's fatigue, but the four horsemen can draw fatigue from any enemy unit in range. So I happily turned J.C. Den's Warlord Monster of Doom into an armor 2 schlub. And I'm like, all right, cool. Well, they die.
And he schwacked it with 16 attack dice, which is the cap on how many attack dice you can have. And
for that unit, because you can only have double your starting amount as a unit.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that you can do some wild stuff and combinations in Saga, but there are also caps and limitations to it, so you don't just go wild creating Death Stars left and right. But you know, and Age of Magic can get a little wilder with that, since it also has magic, which also involves rolling special snowflake dice, but their own specific magic dice, and then you usually only need a single result to unleash a spell, but you get fewer of the magic dice. It's usually the army gets one free dice plus one per wizard. And each spell has three levels of effect, first of which accepts any sort of die, the second needs like a common die, and the third one needs the rarest die, but it also automatically perils. I mean, makes you roll on the abuse of power chart.
Oh, such a good shot. It's such a fun shot.
Yes.
It's just it's not a bad feeling shot either, because you are choosing to do this. You haven't rolled the bad number. You've decided that you're going to use your fancy special boy dice, and now someone's going to come here and kick you in the shins for trying to be a fancy special boy. You power-hungry monster.
A lot of it is getting yourself into trouble, and it's not the rules' fault. It's your fault. Again, like in a regular saga, the dice results are usually fairly stable. For example, when you shoot, you check the enemy armor, which is the target number for you to hit. This is probably the least intuitive part of the game, that armor is the target number to hit someone, and then defending from hits is a stable number set in the rules. When you get shot, you almost always roll 4s to defend, and when you're hit in combat, you roll 5s. So, like, shooting enemies is very attractive since they can't stab you back, but let's say your saves are better. But then armor gets. But then basically almost any snowflake item you take for your soldiers usually reduces your shooting armor. So it gets wild. But when you get into it, and if you've played a regular saga, anything new in Magic Saga is going to be not that unusual. And it has a lot of stuff going from there, from introducing new types of weapons like firearms, and introducing new types of mounts like beasts and flying, and then introducing whole swaths of new character types. And I don't know if this is not us going into army building at this point.
The rules are there from Saga. The Magic Edition, it's more dice to roll, but it's not. You never have to lean into it. Like, my last faction I took was just no sorcerers, because I didn't want to worry about magic. I just wanted to murder everyone. And you know what? That's a kind of spell of its own. I cast Fist and hit you a whole bunch of times.
Yeah. Even if you don't have magic, you still have your Saga abilities. And I think I don't even remember if sorcerers actually give you saga dice. So, like, you know,
I would say taking a sorcerer.
When you build army in saga, you usually base saga would give you 6 points, each of which buys a unit. This one recommends 8 points. And it's usually like this. One point will get you 4 health guard, which are your best troopers, 8 warriors, which are your regular dudes, or 12 levies, which are entirely trash garbage in melee, since they generate 1 dice per 3 dudes, I think, in melee. But they're usually your shooting option, but they also shoot, but they also give 1 shooting dice per 2 dudes. But this game introduces many other things. I actually don't remember if any of these classes say double up in other more historical settings. But you have your faction lieutenants, which are bought not by points, but by removing troopers from other units. And well, there's quite a bit of... Yeah, well, that there's a lot of units and special units in this that are bought by removing dudes, since 8 points isn't exactly granular when it comes to building stuff. So you can't. So if something costs half a point or could be deemed to cost like a quarter of a point, I guess the way to do it without introducing point granularity is to make you remove figures,
which is quite neat. So you can take. Like a point buys you 4 Hearthguard, and you can spend 2 of those Hearthguard to get 2 creatures. So, like, 2 creatures is worth half a point, which, I don't know, like, it works really well. Like, you take, like, war machines, or you can take monsters, or you can take other things. You can exchange levies and warriors. Like, it's simple. Like, farm building is so effective.
Yeah. The only downside is that units stop generating saga dice if they get low enough numbers, if I remember correctly. But I don't remember what the exact breakpoint is. And our test games ended long before that became an issue, since both of them resulted in the warlord kills and warlord kills end games. Age of Magic introduces. Lieutenants, which are your supplementary heroes that can do one faction thing. Disappointingly, the undead faction has the Black Knight, who basically acts as fatigue battery for the warlord. The undead faction also can replace their warlord with a necromancer, which is a wizard, which is a wizardly warlord, while most other factions just have a beat stick.
Who does generate a saga dice.
Yes. Then you also have creatures, which are not your large, big, fuck off, flying monsters, but they are trolls, and anything larger than a human, say, could be a creature, and they have several options, like quadrupeds for centaurs or whatever, or bipeds for just your fantasy ogres, or minotaurs. And then you have behemoths. They'll also come in 3 varieties, like
It's like
Scourge is the flying times type, or Titan is the really big one, but they're slower and less aggressive than the behemoth monster. Yeah, monsters come in 3 sizes,
basically. It's the monsters' choices that are there. They're all fairly evocative. There's no they're across the same, so basically, what kind of upgrades you want. Like, do you want a guy that's better in close combat, or do you want a guy that's slow and really hard to hurt? Like, and these are all extremely fun options.
So saga doesn't really have like normal unit customization like in other games, so what your troops can get and equip, if anything, depends on your army of choice. So some armies can't say take the titan sized creatures, so some creatures can take more monsters or more creatures. The undead, for example, don't take levies. Instead, they have 20 man blobs of mindless that can't be activated normally. They have to be commanded by on the field or
be obey.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, so it really does a lot of shuffling around. That what else is there? War Machines. This game has three types of War Machines, which is your static Bretonian catapult or your somewhat mobile Empire cannon or a flying War Machine, which is something for the dwarf players out there. And then armies futz around with it. They try to do some special sauce. They maybe say some factions allow, like the other world faction, which is meant to represent either your entirely demons faction or your chaos humans. You can make basically anything winged. So you might have a winged Hearthguard who will fly and winged warriors.
I think flying stuff is limited to faction choices, though, because mounting is fine, but whether that mount can fly is a question there.
A lot of it is defined and decided by the faction in question.
Like, undead,
and
then you get Hearthguards can't take flying mounts.
Yes. Almost all Hearthguard can take heavy weapons if they're not on a horse. Sometimes if you put people on a horse, you can give them compound bows so they could that you could have horse archers, which is known as the cheesy power move of pre-gunpowder warfare. There are some weapon differences, bows shoot further than compound bows. Firearms can only fire once a turn. But again, that depends on your army list. Not many of the six armies can get firearms. And then what's cool is that there are legendary army templates that can be layered on top of these babies. For the Great Kingdoms, you can get the Emerald Isle elves, which is high elves, because they have a special rule where their wizard is better and their warriors can take bows, represent better elf shooting. While the other option is the Holy Order to represent your Sisters of Sigmar or whatever. They can't take monsters since monsters are unclean, but they have their own special options, including zealot troops, which are, again, one of those guys that are easier to hit, but they're very happy to get into combat. As well as that, armies also, these army list factions can have a couple of legendary units. For the Great Kingdoms, one of them is the Wizard Conclave, which gives you a unit of four wizards, and it gives you a lot of magical power on the table for, I think, 2 points or something. And the other is the magical, fantastical War Machine, which is a steam tank. It's a steam tank. The only thing that steam tank does that this one can do is melee, since it only deals a single dice of damage in melee. But boy, can that thing shoot. On the other hand, if you look at Otherworld, the legendary units are Archdemon, which transforms your warlord into a flying, fire-breathing, magic-slinging demon, and the Avatar, which is a slow-moving, magical, and fairly customizable representation of your god. And Otherworld doesn't necessarily mean demons. You can say play angels or whatever. That's entirely supported by the rules.
Demons, theocracies, all fine.
And then factions can just have, like I mentioned, the very special snowflake units. The underground faction has the destruction team, which is you remove two warriors and get a team of two dudes who can shoot with three dice. So that's a lot more shooting than you're getting out of two warriors, where they can also explode, which is very cool. And if you're playing Skaven, that is very apropos for you. And it's interesting how this game has the same army list to represent both dwarves and Skaven.
What's the difference, really?
They're small. They're stunty. One of them horrible little creatures. Than the other. Yes. So, army building in the saga isn't as wild as you'd say in Xeno's Rampant, but it has a lot going for it. And
It's not as customizable as other games, but the choices you get are very open and able for you to customize them in a way that works for you. Like, a sorcerer is either winged or not. A lieutenant is either winged or not for Otherworld. Your warlord can have, like, a bunch of stuff, but most of it is just sort of, like, the same. Like, do you want to be on a horsey or a flying horsey?
That, again, is all on yourself, on how you want to build an army. You can definitely build an army of basically nothing but Hearthguard, and you'll have very few miniatures, but they'll hit more. If you mount your warlord on a beast, then you probably want to add a single unit of Hearthguard mounted on a beast so you could ride in and hit people. If you're playing with an archdemon warlord, maybe you shouldn't rush him in the first turn to attack the enemy's warlord replacement unit, which is like costs two or three points as and it's an absolute monster to take down in close
fine.
Combat.
Fine. Let's just try it. Let's do that and see what happens. Because I believe in you. Alone believe in you.
Yeah. There is, like I said, between the special army templates, legendary units, regular unit replacements, there's a lot of variety, and you can build your favorite fantasy, not just Warhammer fantasy army out there.
It's so willing to meet you halfway, if you're willing to give it a slight benefit of the doubt. Like, it's so interested in letting you represent a faction in exactly how you want, with like customization and modeling and stuff, as long as your guys are on like round or square bases, that's okay with it. It just works so well, and like the freedom it has is so freeing, rather than being like, oh, I see you don't have like this exact specific style of elves, like, who gives a fuck, just call them warriors with bows, like, use some goddamn imagination.
Yeah, well, one very helpful guy on Tabletop Simulator has made modules where he's ripping Warhammer Fantasy models and building armies and helpfully writing out which unit counts as what and what rules they have. Mm. No, it's not always correct, but hey, it's free.
Like, it works. Like, it's a game that works, and the army building is evocative enough for myself and my purposes that, like, I could see myself just building up some guys. There wouldn't be a lot of guys to build up, much like Viking Warband can be, like, 24 people.
Yeah, like eight points is enough rope to hang yourself with. You can even if some of the monsters and creatures like can go up to 3 points, which, you know, shows that it's a massive unit you have to really respect. Just go at it, see what happens to you, and then you can go buy yourself miniatures, though I think Saga Age of Magic is one of those games where you start by having miniatures and then going into it.
But yeah, like, the options are insane. You've got every 3D printing crowd making stuff for this game. You've got boxes and boxes of fantasy guys. Like, whatever you think will work.
Yeah.
Will work.
What's even better is that the Tomahawk has an example army for each of the six factions represented, and they also list the miniature manufacturer for that specific army. So you have Mantic, you have Fireforge represented. You also have Mears miniatures, but those guys don't have the best of reputation when it comes to things. So, like, maybe skip on them. And you're really well served, because, well, basically any fantasy faction under the sun that's not extremely based on a single IP can be played in this game. So, some finessing, you'd be able to run this with your War Machine army.
Yeah, but like, even then, you could make it work. Like, even games where you're running guys off of trays would be fine.
Yeah, as long as you mark losses, because like usually the one thing you track outside of individual casualty movement is how much fatigue a unit has, and it's like, since units can only have like Most units can only have free fatigue before becoming exhausted. You don't really need to do that much tracking on the table. So get your Frostgrave and start building some warbands. Go to the Ninth Age website and start looking at their alternatives for Games Workshop miniatures. Shank your uncle for his pre-pajama Empire troop army.
And then, like, you go, like, small scale, you go, like, 6 mil or lower, or 15 mil.
Yeah.
Like, even crazy guys. It's just so much freedom and variety and options and support in this game to mix things up. Even, like, at 6 mil, I probably wouldn't change the range bands because it's still, like, a 4x3 board. Like, it's not...
Yeah, at 6 millimeter, the only thing I do is multi-base. So the warrior unit of 8 troops would be 40 dudes for me, and it wouldn't be off. And like the warlord being his own heroic band of dudes on a stand. I think it's even supported in like 28 millimeters, like as warlords can have bigger bases, and that allows you to multi-base them with, like, you know, either some more people to justify their increased aggression versus a single dude, or, like, you know, some retainers to make them look flashier and stand out on the table, because this is very much a game of your warlord is your very special dude.
Just the variety of people that are making fantasy stuff nowadays. This is like, once again, the golden era of miniatures is contemporaneous with this podcast. Weird. I don't know what started. Probably us. So you have infinite options. Like, there's whatever weird vibe you want to go through with your fantasy army, you can probably hit it. You can have uncomfortably naked models. You can have overly dramatic models. You can have horror themed guys. You can have dripping with any sort of material. There's no limitation beyond your wallet and your consent and your willingness to get them painted.
Yes. And if you're unwilling to paint games, this is, I guess, our call to once again promote WoWFun miniatures. They're not paying us and not supporting us in any way. Their plexiglass standees look good, especially when the guy's pet Peter Dennis's art. I mentioned to Casa how I would have run the Otherworld army as Castle from Heroes of Might and Magic 3 if there was like model support on that on TTS. And I think this is a thing you can do with WoWFun standees, since they have the Heroes 3 line, what's essentially a Heroes 3 line. Go wild. Do whatever looks nice.
Nice photos.
Send photos, tag us. Getting past this, the easiest part of the podcast. Compliment sandwich. This is going to be hard because some of these compliments would probably be compliments to Saga. So I'll say this: I really like how their limited set of armies so easily map onto fantasy factions I'd like to run from other games and settings. Well, other settings. So when I was reading about the Great Kingdom Army, maybe in 2018 when this game came out or something, and I was like, yeah, this is Warhammer Fantasy Empire. I'd run it. The Saga ability is also mesh into that running Empire miniatures. I can see myself playing it. It's like I'd play. This is that was the inception for this episode back then. So, and all the other groups like the Horde is for orcs. And yeah, it's good. I like how inspiring they are, and that Tomahawk also provides like more examples for it. This was a thing we praised a lot in Zeno's Rampant review, and this is a thing we're going to praise here.
Yeah, it works really well for letting you know that you can use any of your guys, and here's some suggestions. Also, here's the models we use for these ones. It's also really cool.
Yeah,
mine would be that, like, the magic system bolts on so smoothly and just feels so evocative immediately.
Yeah, Magic System is fairly easy, and it's also fairly close in shape to what the Saga board system is. Though you get to choose spells. Usually it's three per wizard, and they usually have access to two spheres of magic. And the spells aren't exactly that out there either. And if you really want the wildest result, your wizard is likely to have their head explode. But the magic system is really nice, and it solves a lot of problems that, say, other fantasy magic systems have.
And you have so few fills, and they're all so fun. None of them, like, there are a couple of like things that are situational, as opposed to, like, it's always good to have bonus dice, but sort of like, well, you know, a bonus move is good, and like,
yeah, bonus armor.
But greed it inspires in you is so perfect. Just like, oh, I do want to cause a casualty and a fatigue, and also, whoops, everyone around me lost casualty. Oh, bells.
Yes, when games fire greed in the player and then let you get greedy, it's good. And then you lose your archdemon. If I wanted to find a complaint, then I probably have to reach for it, I guess. Not all of the spells are equally as exciting, and sometimes they're, I guess, less evocative than the Saga board abilities. But that's, I guess, a fairly minimal complaint. It's somewhat hard to have hard complaints about these games.
Yeah, I think mine might be that the actions kind of staple to generic fantasy a bit too much. I'd much rather see some more like weird fantasy. But it's also that's just how much you want to sculpt weird fantasy and smack them into this like square hole. Like, I'm not quite sure how I'd change it, but it does evoke like annoyingly one-to-one to like GW factions, and like I'm not sure if I see a different kind of weird, but like it also aligns pretty well with Age of Sigmar stuff, and just it's what's popular and what people like. So like, who knows? I'd much rather see a Saga Age of Sci-Fi, but that's also a running complaint that I have about most things, so it's not reasonable.
Can we have a Saga version of this? No? Okay.
No.
Second compliment that I have is that both the legendary units and the legendary warbands, quote-unquote, feel very cool. They're very nice ways to bring more flavor and more weirdness to the faction, and also account for the weirder units. Like, the Horde faction has the Great Beast, which can alternatively be either the Ragnarok Spider or the Mumakil from Lord of the Rings game. And I enjoy that. That's basically it.
It's so cool to be sort of like, I want to take a big monster, and all the big monsters kind of work the same, but they have a tie into your faction, which is works really well. And it's like, well, how do you want to model it or sculpt it or whatever? It's like, you know, whatever you really want.
It can also get very weird. For example, Casa played the undead, and one of their legendary units is Spectres, which almost don't act as a unit. They almost act as a spell or an attack that you have, because they disappear at the end of your activation phase. They can't be harmed, and what they do is fly over units and cause fatigues. And the thing is that they also cause fatigue for themselves, and at the end of the activation, you roll a dice, add fatigue, and if you get a certain result or something, you start removing your Spectre ghost guys off. But other than that, it works really differently from anything you've previously seen in and say what a Hearthguard unit equivalent can do.
And like to follow on from that, like my second compliment would be that the warbands included do provide a nice little the unique faction warbands do provide a nice little twist. Like the undead get their like Egyptian undead, so they get chariots, which, you know, otherwise don't exist. Or you could carry eaters, so if they have no fatigue, they can suffer fatigue to get extra dice, and like when they eat, when they hurt someone, they remove fatigue. So like that can be a really annoying sort of push and pull they start doing towards you. And like the Horde have sort of like island bound guys, or like ruffians who are much more goofier. It's just fun. And it sort of covers that, patches up that issue I had before of like not enough specificity, but also
yeah,
in the wrong way. But like also like it's just, it works. And they all have fun little twists and tweaks to the otherwise neat rules.
Yeah, what Kasa mentioned about the Horde, that one part of the Horde might be like the ruffians, the, you know, ever-present fantasy bandit group. The other option of the Horde is Oops All Monsters, or Oops All Creatures. I think it's called Isle of Morrow, so it evokes the Island of Skull from King Kong. So that, while I don't think the monsters are big in the same way, it's still like, hey, you want to run an army of monsters? And so this is an army of like big fuck off creatures. If you wanted to be all minotaurs all day long.
Oops, all monsters.
Yeah, your warlord, a monster. Your all other guys, also monsters.
You're a monster. You get to be a monster. And like.
But I'm already playing the Vikings. I do have a fairly meta complaint, I guess, about the way Saga is structured, and that Saga 2 rulebook comes with basically one scenario, and that scenario is fairly basic. It's like the scenario section in the Saga 2 book is like what, 2 or 3 pages, and doesn't provide that much variety and that much flavor. And the magic book comes with no scenarios or anything. For that, you need to buy the Saga Battles book, Book of Battles, because that's how they went with the second edition. The main book has no factions in it, only the rules. The Book of Battles has all the battles, and then you buy the Age of Vikings or Age of Magic book to layer to get those army lists and stuff. And it's just like not that convenient for the player. It also misses the campaign rules, which I think were also in the... Well, Maybe they weren't in the main book in the first game, but I would like to see how campaign rules interact with the freaky stuff from Age of Magic, because in the 40K and stuff, like Crusade rules are some of the coolest shit, which is unfortunately tacked onto a rule set that does not interest me at all. But would
That's
love
how
to see
like
how
stuff like.
Yeah, but I'd like to see how campaign rules work with the Age of Magic stuff. Since again, like I said, I have some background with playing campaigns in the first edition.
If campaigns are your thing, missing from this game does suck. That's the way around it.
Now for the killer question, would you play Saga Age of Magic if you had to buy your own army?
I probably would. I built a Saga army. We ran it as one of the Crusades sections, and they were built using an Age of Kings starter for the Ice Giants. So the plan in theory was to get into Age of Magic, but that mate stopped being interested in that sort of game as he sort of comes and goes and hems and haws as his brain fatigue works on that kind of stuff. But like, yes, I would. I have bought and have an Age of Magic army ready to go.
It's easier for you, but I can see my specialty Viking dice from here that I had bought for 5th edition Magic. And if I had a couple of friends roaring to go for an Age of Magic campaign, I would. I would buy it and I would play it. Of course, it would be a little more expensive than it was going for Age of Magic, because not Age of Magic, Saga 1st Edition, because it was like, I think, was it Renedra or something? Or Gripping Beast that immediately launched boxes made specifically for starting warbands or six-pointer warbands. And I had painted up some Vikings and I had a lot of fun doing freehand shields, even if that was years ago. So maybe I am slightly better at painting now. So yeah, I'd play it. besides, a fantasy army is never going to go amiss for rule sets, even if you might have to transfer them to a movement tray at some point.
You'll find something that works in for sure.
Yeah. And, like, you know, if the Warhammer Old World doesn't pan out, there's always a place for those miniatures. Speaking of which, and related to the subject, one of the ideas that has been stuck inside my head for a long time, and I've scared Casa with once or twice, was trying the Warhammer Fantasy alternative / Inheritors in the shape of, if I remember correctly, the Warhammer Armies project and the ninth age. So if you would be interested in us doing this more conventional rank and flank, sound off in the comments, sound off in the Discord. We love our few patrons who have appeared on Discord. And those guys on our patron-only Discord are cool people who post about miniatures and rule sets that haven't been developed by any of the big boys. And they are even doing their own game design because, like, hey, when you come to that point where you're either doing this podcast or listening to that to this podcast, you're probably this close to just releasing your own rule set.
Yeah, if you're interested in miniature gaming, that's going to be just an easy thing to fall into. I don't want to play Ninth Age. That sounds garbage. But I will do it if there is a public outcry that we should play Ninth Age.
I told you I was scaring Casa with these suggestions. I'm also intimidating myself since the conquest less argument of kings really somewhat soured me on conventional rank and flank. Since, like, if you haven't listened to those episodes, having played Conquest so soon after A Song of Ice and Fire made me go like, oh man, this is tedious. This is a lot of work compared to. Hey, my tray of guys slams into your tray of guys. What do I need to do? Well, I have to decide whether I want to engage with full front or half of the front. Doesn't matter either way. It just allows me to maybe charge in with the second unit for my next activation, versus like forming, reforming, counting ranks of guys. But hey, if you guys want it, I semi-secretly, semi-shamefully want it. So, like, you know, just sound off at us on that.
Yeah, Conquest seems to really swings around about for that game. Either people love it or people do not love it, and they're very vocal about their issues. And the issues seem like actual issues. So, hopefully, it sings more people, and it doesn't. It's a neat world.
Yeah, Conquest had some neat game ideas and some neat world ideas and some very expensive miniatures. Neat miniatures, but very expensive. And I think I've read some goons post about it, that they've recently resolved some of their issues, but not all of them. And that the deployment mechanic, where you bring in units behind lighter units so you wouldn't have to march across the board, still doesn't really work the way you'd want it to work. Excuse me for the cat battle sounds in the background. I assure you this has nothing to do with Conquest. My cats don't play with miniatures. But yeah, if you have any sort of impressions of playing Conquest past on a later date than we recorded our episode about it, also do tell us about it. I mean, there is no knowledge about the quote-unquote indie miniature games that we don't appreciate.
Yeah, we're into all of it. We want to know about all your favorites. We want to know about your armies. We want to know about everything you do. We're very greedy that way.
Yes. And with that, this has been Fortified Niche episode on Saga Age of Magic. I have been your host, JC Dent, and Casa has been, as always, the other host. Go follow us on the social medias, on the Patreon for those cute bonus episodes and Discord fun time. And we'll see you all next time.
Bye.
Bye.